Hello, everyone. My name is Jinx Monsoon, and welcome to a brand new episode of Hi Jinx with me, Jinx Monsoon. Today, my guest is Ross Matthews. Okay, so I was a little nervous going into this episode, conversation, what have you. It's my first time ever interviewing a judge of Drag Race. How the times have turned and the tables. Anyway, so Ross and I have a lovely conversation about his long and storied career. We talk about what it means and the kind of pressures he faces being a drag race judge and being so openly queer on mainstream television. And we have a little moment just to pay homage to a shared icon, Drew Barrymore. All of that and much, much more today on Hi Jinx. So buckle up, hunker down, and sink your teeth into some brand new Hi Jinx.
M.
Oh.
M.
Mom!
Everyone, I'm Jinx Monsoon, and welcome to Hi Jinx, a podcast where I, an internationally tolerated drag superstar, get to interview compelling and fascinating people about how they became who they are and why they do what they do. Today, we are joined by TV personality, author, comedian, podcast host, and drag race judge. It's the hilarious Ross Matthews. Hi, Ross.
Hi, Jinx.
Okay, so this is the first time I've ever had a drag race judge on the podcast. You're the perfect first judge. Michelle won't answer the email. So no.
Oh my God, I didn't know that. I'm honored. Well, I have to tell you, if you don't mind me just hijacking very quickly. You don't know this, I don't think, but I'm like a Jinx super fan. I didn't get to judge your season. In fact, I didn't get to like, I met you, you know, but then I didn't get to like participate with you on the show until All Stars. And I had to like rein it in of what a Jinx super fan I am. So, I mean, when I got the email, will you do this? Will you do Hi Jinx? It was like as fast as my little fingers could type. Yes, yes, yes. I love you so much. And, you know, I just think the world of you.
Oh, well, thank you. The feeling is mutual. You've been around for forever. I don't say that. I say that to a lot of people, and I'm never commenting on someone's age. Uh-huh. I'm commenting on the fact that, like, celebrity, you know, like, to be around for, like, 20 years, I realize in my adulthood how big a deal that is in our business, you know?
It
to,
is.
To, like, I mean, stay present.
Yeah, it's that longevity, you know, that is the hardest thing. I mean, there's two hard things about show business. It's about getting that first break and then what you do with it, you know? Right? Those are the two hard things.
Oh, absolutely. And I find myself, because, you know, I think a lot these days about celebrities, you know, like 20 years ago, 10 years ago, where their TV show was the biggest thing or something was going on where, okay, Mark Hamill, like when Star Wars was happening.
Thank you. Okay. Yes.
He probably couldn't walk anywhere without, you know, like being accosted with Star Wars questions, you know. But nowadays, I bet he could live a relatively normal life, but he's still a working actor. He still is constantly working, you know. I just think about this kind of ebb and flow of where attention goes. And I think the people who kind of stay like right next to the center of attention stay around longer because the pressure of being the center of attention is a little damning, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I think that's very, very astute of you because you're right. I think sometimes when people burn as bright as the sun, what happens is that sort of does fizzle out. You can't sustain.
Those who burn twice as bright burn half as long.
Ding, ding, ding. There you go. Bumper sticker. There is something to that, you know, and you know, that's kind of been my career, Jinx. You know, yeah. I've been lucky enough to start on Leno way back in 2001, and then Chelsea Lately, and then RuPaul's Drag Race, and now the Drew Barrymore show. I've always sort of been right
your,
there.
Your gigs just keep getting progressively gayer, but you've always been this gay.
I think, yes, I... You know, I never had to come out, Jinx, you know? People say, how did you have the courage in the early days in like 2001 to be out on TV? I'm like, there was no in, honey. There was nothing.
It's very similar for me. I mean, I dated girls in middle school, but it was more of a social experiment than anyone like actually thinking I was straight. My mom thought, oh, they must be straight because they're dating girls. But that was the last bastion.
I get it too. Because I think you have to try things to know what you like. It's like you try mushrooms. That was sort of like when I went down on a girl in high school. It was like, well, I have to try it before I, you know, you always
you
try
can't,
it.
You can't like, you know, yeah. You know what it is? This reminds me of the first time I had a bisexual threesome. They were a married couple. And what you were saying, I just remember getting caught in a logic like that, where basically a bisexual married couple wanted to have their first, like, the husband wanted to have his first queer experience. And the wife was very supportive. And I had already, like, kind of made eyes with the husband. And I'm like, what am I doing here? But basically... the wife gives me and the husband a little time alone together, and we're kind of like making out and blah, blah, blah. And then she comes back and just kind of wants to watch. And then eventually she gets involved, and he says, well, Jinx, I'm having my first queer experience. What if you had your first heteronormative experience? And I was like, yeah, I can't fault you there. So this was in my 20s after being extremely queer for a long, long time. And I was like, you know what? I have never tried it. And I feel a little bit like a hypocrite right now. So I'm going in.
You went in. You did it. I'm proud of you.
Ross, when you were on Leno, were you ever asked to tone it down?
Yeah. Well, in a way, listen, you have to remember, this was 2001 when I was starting on television. Yeah. I was still in college. People don't know how, I feel like people of a certain age know the origin story of me on television, but I think a lot of sort of Drag Race viewers don't know.
I think I knew back to Chelsea Handler, and she probably erased any memories. I mean, I wasn't an avid Leno watcher in 2001. I won't bring it up, but anyway, I wasn't watching. I watched the, I would watch the headlines,
on Monday nights.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, just an intern, and I love television, Jinx. I always wanted to be a talk show host, but there weren't people like, you know, like us on television. They weren't. And so I got the internship there, and then I love TV. I have always loved, you know, so I wanted to know what was a writer, what was a producer, who was the person who pulled the cord that made the curtain open. I wanted to know everybody. So I just started talking to everybody. And then the comic dropped out of covering the Ocean's 11 premiere. That's how long ago. Okay. And the writer who I had talked to said, you know, who's funny, everybody, is that Ross in the hallway. And so they sent me out, and I don't know that it was everybody's cup of tea, you know, in terms of, I don't know, but I do know that it rated, you know, Jay always did the monologue, and then bits, the second part of the show was bits like headlines or something. And nothing really held the monologue after the monologue. Most people turned it off and went to bed, but for some reason, my stuff held the monologue. So I don't know that everybody was on board with me being on the show, but the audience showed up, and that's really what saved me in those early days. And then I ended up doing that show for 14 years. Was I asked to tone it down? Not like implicitly, but there were definitely conversations.
Like coded language.
Yes. And then, you know, as I would go and try to pitch shows, I mean, this is early 2000s, Jinx, network executives who are still working today would tell me to my face, like, oh, you know, I mean, I think you're funny, but no, you're too gay for us. Too gay. This is too gay. Like, can you imagine?
Yeah. You know, I think there used to be, I can only like relate it to like what I saw at my acting school. Like when I went to acting school, the teachers were blunt. And they told you that's part of the business. You have to deal with people. You have to be okay or like know how to handle directors being extremely blunt to you. And they would say like, you know, they would try to teach us the difference between like a critique or a note and someone just being abusive, of course. But our teachers were really, really blunt with us. And it was kind of like... It's since changed at that school, like policies have changed and teachers are much more gentle, but it was kind of like being in show business. It was like, oh, actually in show business, you have to handle abuse as a day to day, you know, well, it's
you know, and you're right. And abuse is there's certainly a much clearer line between abuse and being direct. Now, I will say as a performer, though, I kind of thrive on the direct critique. You
know, oh, like I do, too, which is funny because I try to be such a positive, kind person. But I love being picked apart because that's when my biggest like achievements have normally come out of a vendetta against someone. You know?
Totally. And I think about that, like on the, for example, on me, on the judges panel, like mm-hmm. I sort of critique from a point of love, you know, and wanting you to build you up. But if I were standing on that stage, I would thrive on Michelle critiques with love as well, but she's much more direct. I would want to be critiqued like that. Yeah. Like she is, because I think, I don't know, you do kind of get mad at that and you want to.
You want to prove something.
Yes. Right.
And you want to be the person kindly smiling at the end, looking around at a room full of people who said no to you. And you're like, oh, hi, I'm just accepting my Golden Globe or my Emmy or whatever.
But I think you have that, too. I see you as, you know, not only do you have the goods, Jinx, but I see you are very, very competitive with yourself. I see you, you know, lead with kindness in the world. But that doesn't mean that you aren't highly competitive within. Is that true?
Oh, absolutely. And with others. I mean, like, I think, you know, I think I pick and choose which things are important to me. And it's really, it used to be I was competitive about everything. I mean, there's a game, there's a game that is forbidden in my circle of friends who I went to college with. We're not allowed to play this game except for on my birthday or my friend Jesse's birthday because we get so competitive. We've never lost, but we're so disgusting about winning this game. So the game has been banned in my circle of friends. So I used to be competitive about everything. Nowadays, maybe it's the meds or maybe it's just like, you know, feeling very content in life. I'm really only competitive about the things I care about. Like I can play video games with my friends and not like freak out that I lost Mario Kart. But there was a time where I thought there was a conspiracy theory that they had like messed with my controller so I couldn't. Yeah.
Hilarious that you're obsessed about Mario Kart. Well, I think for like the more success you achieve, the more boxes you check out, the things that you want to accomplish, mm-hmm. like then it just becomes about, you know, everybody winning. And this seems so Pollyanna, but I mean, you think about like, it's so funny. I was just with Heather McDonald last night, who's a comic who was on Chelsea Lately with me. And we were talking about how supportive we all are. I mean, that Chelsea Lately crew, all those people on that round table have gone on to do such amazing things. And we've always been supportive. And I think on Drag Race, we're all supportive of each other too. You know, even though we're all competitive, we want each other to win.
It definitely felt like that on All Stars. It definitely felt like we were very competitive. The competition was real, but there was a lot to celebrate in that room. And then I have found, excuse me, I feel like lately with the legislation coming out against drag queens and trans people, I feel like lately the kind of dog-eat-dog mentality that exists within the drag world of like who's going to get what gigs and blah, 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 blah. I don't know. Lately, it's been really mellow. I just feel like everyone's just got each other's back right now in the Drag Race sisterhood. We're all just kind of clapping for each other, at least where I've been sitting. I was just on tour with Monet and Trinity. And, you know, we would just sit and scroll and talk about how many cool things are happening for drag queens. Of course, we'd read a couple of the All Stars 8 looks. You know, we're still human, but but it was a really nice time, and none of us felt. I mean, we felt nervous for the laws happening, but we didn't feel nervous for our careers or for our fan base. You know, like it's funny because like. The oppressive powers coming down on us is putting that much more emphasis on unity and community right now, especially it's Pride Month, targets, you know, flip-flopping every which way. We got to take care of each other right now.
I honestly, it's so true. And this is not like a segue to a plug, but, you know.
No, segue, you're perfect.
But it's a segue to my intention. You know, I'm on tour right now. And mm-hmm. my stand-up tour is called I Got You, Girl. And the reason why I named it that is because after, you know, everything we've been through the past few years and everything that we're sort of facing politically now, even though my show's not political, it's really about, I truly believe we have to have each other's back right now, more than ever. I mean, we've faced adversity as a community forever, you know, but like, I don't know, this time it feels like they are so petrified of the progress that we made that it feels personal. You know?
Yeah, it definitely feels personal. It feels like it's like such a grasp at like we've just got, they're hitting so below the belt these days. It's like it's so targeted and so blatant that it just really feels like they know the only people these days who are supporting them are the most fanatical.
Yeah.
And so they've dropped this guise of the Republicans are for everyone who just thinks conservatively in terms of like, you know, economics or whatever. And now it's like literally to be a Republican, you have to hate queers and you have to hate women. And like their party has gone so far extreme that the only people that like are supporting them are those extreme people. So now they have nothing left to lose. You know, they're just going for it. It makes me think of that like quote about like an animal backed into a corner will fight harder, or an animal like on its last breath will like fight even fiercer because it knows it's dying, you know?
Yeah,
I hope that's what it is.
There is a desperation in who's running and the positions they're taking. But I have to believe, and this is totally, I totally 100% believe this, that like it's not going to work. Like when people actually go into the ballot box, if they make us the issue, our community the issue, like you can't put this genie back in the bottle. People know us now. They see our stories. They really do. And I think like they think it's going to work because it worked in, you know, 2004 when Bush ran for re-election, you know, but it's not going to, it's a different time. So I think it's kind of, okay, you're trying it, cute, but I don't think it's going to work in the long haul. That's where I go when I'm scared that it's terrible.
I love that belief. And I like to have like my optimistic outlook. You know, my most petulant outlook is that we're on the way to some kind of revolution, but I don't know. Who knows what that'll look like?
Yeah. If it all goes to shit, can I just say, that's why I love you, Jinx, is because even like when the world is falling apart and I watch you, there's just joy. I feel such joy. And that's what I want to focus on, you know?
Like, oh, absolutely. You know, it's funny because I do have so much joy in my work, and my work is so like about pointing all of these things out, you know, and talking about all of these things in the most like freewheeling way. But that brings me a lot of joy. Like, I like making people laugh and then knowing I made them laugh about something I care about, and hopefully they're going to go home and think about that more, you know?
The movies are back, baby. And if you're looking for a weekly podcast to keep up with all the new releases and all the hottest news and rumors coming out of Hollywood, check out Movies, Baby, with 5 Y's. Is Emma Stone on track for greatest actress of all time?
What's the best Godzilla movie of all?
What's up with John Cena?
Love Lies Bleeding? We'll take more where that came from.
What movie should have won Best Picture at this year's Oscars?
Hint, it's the name of 2 months, and they ain't close together.
Those are just some of the topics we've discussed on recent episodes of Movies, Baby. Every week on Movies, Baby, Forever Dog co-founders and lifelong movie fanatics Brett and Joe break down the hottest movie news, review the latest releases, shout out forgotten classics, and prophesy the future of Hollywood. You can listen to Movies, Baby wherever you get podcasts, and you can watch Movies, Baby live every Thursday night on YouTube at Movies, Baby with 5 Y's. Movies, Baby!
You were on Chelsea Handler for many years, and with your outlook being so positive and Chelsea's outlook being like she hates everything, what was that dynamic like working with her? And is that her like onstage persona, or is she really that kind of like grumpy all the time? Because I love it. I'm addicted to it.
I just first want to say I love her and we're great friends. Every time she's in New York, we get together for happy hour. I met her on Leno and she was the complete opposite of me. And I thought she was sort of so ridiculous in her grumpiness or whatever word you want to use. And she thought I was so like ridiculous as like a gay cartoon version of human being. And we kind of were so polar opposites and we got a kick out of each other. And I'll tell you a quick story. When she started Chelsea Lately, she said, please come on my show. Cause we had done stand up together. We had toured together and she said, come on my show. And I was like, okay. And I went in and, you know, that was a show with a round table of the best comedians. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're aggressive types of people. And I'm from Mount Vernon, Washington, about an hour north of where you are in Seattle. So we're polite. I'm like, you know, I sat there waiting for my turn and I said like nothing on the show. And then she said, come back. And I still have the email. I wrote her, I don't think it's for me. And she said, you're funnier than you think. And I was like, okay. So I came back and then I got a joke in there, you know, mm-hmm. and it worked. And I realized that I don't have to be as funny as these comedians. I just need to talk from my point of view because no one will have my point of view because it's unique to me. And she leaned into me when I got a laugh and she said, somebody's coming into his own. And then she had me on every week. And when she started having me guest host when she was gone and she executive produced my own show on E, she became like a big sister. You know, she's tough. She's tough. Yeah. And she'll give it to you brutal. Well, I was growing my hair out once and she said, you look ridiculous in the hallway as she walked by me. Okay. You know, but again, I think like we talked about, we thrive on that. Give it to me hard. And that's why we worked, you know, and I did love being on that show with her because she would have one point of view and then I'd be at the end of the table being like, okay, but I kind of love Jessica Simpson, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Chelsea Handler was actually on a list of people I was considering for Snatch Game.
Ooh, how would you do Chelsea?
there wasn't much to it, you know? It was just kind of me never moving. You know how she kind of just like, she gets into her position and she kind of like barely turns her head to the person. So it's just kind of like me like going, okay, no, no, I don't like that. You know, like I never got that far into the character because no one, and everyone was like, it's just, I don't think you're going to, it was the same thing for Meryl Streep. It's like, I had too small of one joke. Yeah. And I was like, can I stretch out this joke to carry like a 20-minute conversation?
I speak for the greater universe when I say you chose correctly for Snatch Game.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, I have no doubts in my mind. I used to like to go back and nitpick just everything. These days, I have a mantra that is like my mantra, like overall. But it's, we don't argue with a standing ovation, which is basically like, if people are liking it, why are you going to be the one to tell them they're wrong?
Yeah, that's good. Can I ask you a question on that note?
Yeah.
How did you, because I think, you know, your Judy is one of the, is probably the greatest of all time. And just, you know, there have been some great ones, but that's okay. How did that feel? Like when you went home that night and laid your head on the pillow, what did you feel?
Well, it felt a lot like the first time where I just knew, like, I mean, the very first time I went on Drag Race, it was all just to do Snatch Game. Like, Snatch Game was the reason I fell in love with Drag Race. And I, like, you know, someone who likes to plan, like, 12 steps ahead. 12 steps. Anyway. There's something there. Anyway, I was planning well ahead. And I was like, if I could just show off what I could do with, like, impersonations, I know how I could parlay that into my next, like, local gig, you know? I was just thinking, like, I could come back to Seattle after doing Drag Race and do a whole, like, Little Edie series, you know?
Yeah.
So it was just kind of like, I think for me, there's no greater feeling than mission accomplished. You know, like, I set a goal, and when I meet the goal, that's, like, that's my, like, euphoria. As a Virgo is when I set a goal and I meet the goal and there were no big hiccups along the way, or I handled the hiccups with effortless grace, you know.
Yeah. So could you receive it that night when you went to bed? Like, could you say, oh my God, I did that?
Yeah. I was able to receive it. You know, it always is kind of like what I get from the other girls is what matters the most. On season 5, no one really cared about Little Edie. So I was like still kind of in the place of, was that the right choice? But I knew I had done really well because I cracked Rue up.
Yes.
But with this one, the girls were really like, you did very, very well. The only person who said a little chaos comment was Evie saying, yeah, but do you think Jinx will win? Because they weren't as into Natasha. And Evie was really good at finding the one thing that's living at the back of your brain and saying it out loud. But hilarious. That's just, she's a chaos demon. You gotta love her for it, you know?
Yeah, I do love her, yes.
So when you first got asked to judge on RuPaul's Drag Race, I feel like it was an immediate yes. But were you nervous about being in the judging role? Did you have this like plan of how you were going to judge going in?
Well, it's funny how it all happened. You know, I just came as a guest judge, I think like season 3 or something. And then back and see whenever, I don't remember. I came a second time as a guest judge. And then they said, can you come back for a couple next season? You know? And I was like, yeah, great. It wasn't like there was a conversation about joining full time. there wasn't. And there weren't like chemistry. I'd never been on with Carson. There wasn't like a chemistry test, you know? And I was doing my show Hello Ross at the time. So scheduling was hard. And it really wasn't, this is so stupid, but until season 7 was airing, and they put out like a press release that Carson and I joined full time. I was like, oh, I'm like a full time job. Like, I really, there wasn't, it was just sort of a scheduling thing. And so, but those are the best things, you know, yeah. When you kind of don't force it, it just kind of happens. But, and then to the question of how did I decide to approach it? Well, there's only one way to approach it. And I mean, who am I to judge a drag competition show? I don't do drag. But I'll tell you what I do bring. And it's like, I feel as like the super fan who won a golden ticket. I watch every second of the show. I've been to, I mean, there must be some sort of Guinness record for the amount of hours spent at drag shows and drag brunches. I would be in the mix for that. I really sit there and I try to judge from a point of view of like, would it wow me in the club? Mm-hmm. Would everyone jump up? Would I want to follow you on Instagram? Would I buy your merch? Would I wait in line at DragCon? Would I, you know?
Yeah.
And that's sort of what I can bring. And I think that's kind of why it works. I mean, Michelle brings, she's just like got such cultural knowledge. Rue brings, you know, yeah. The Mount Rushmore of drag. Carson has such a fashion POV. And I just am a super fan of what you all do.
It really comes across that way. And I think the judges panel needs that, you know, because if you think about like who drag is designed to excite, like, yeah, we need someone who's there speaking for the people of like, this is what we gag for, you know?
Totally. And like, I have no intention and I have no interest in criticizing any of the queens that are on the show. Zero interest. Anything I ever say, and I hope it comes across like this, and I know there have been people in the past who didn't take it this way, but so I just want to do a blanket statement. My only intention is to just, from a point of view of the fan sitting in the front row, to just nudge you to your greatest potential. I mean, you are the perfect example. I mean, actually, you sort of showed us how it was done. You didn't need any critique, but but I mean, there have been some time, you see it on our show where people start one way and then they just become under this pressure, like they thrive and they really truly reach their potential. Honestly, it gives me chills now because it is so rewarding to see. And it's not because I gave a note. It's because they can, it's like holding a mirror up to them and they get better. When you perform something in the mirror, you look at yourself, you realize.
When it clicks, it clicks. You know, like we have those moments of something just clicking in, and it's when we understand it viscerally. You know, when it stops being something our brain is trying to piece together and starts being something that your body just knows what to do. You know, like I gotta say, All Stars was a really incredible experience, and post All Stars has been really incredible. And I'm not just talking about like the airtime or the opportunities that have come after All Stars, but like, oh my God, I've been talking to the wrong end of the microphone.
But story of our careers, right?
But I just feel like All Stars is really important for like getting that sense of self affirmed. Like when you go on one season, and I mean, I had to wait a decade to go on All Stars. I don't know what it's like for the girls who kind of do the revolving door, but like going on and then going on 10 years later was kind of like, okay, now I've had 10 years in this business, and now let me show you what I've learned within the industry, you know? Like, before, it's kind of like you're coming just as a, you know, a drag artist from your town, and All Stars is when you're competing as, like, a name, you know? Metamorphosis period where you come, if you're taking in all of the experiences, you come out as like a more fully realized you on the other end.
Yeah. I mean, what I love about All Stars is that people call it a glow up, but it's not about that. You know, of course there's more money or they got their teeth done or something, you know, whatever it is, but it's really about what you learn by doing this for a bit, you know, what you know to be true, that you have learned that in crunch time when things have gone wrong and you've been on stage in front of 100 people that you got yourself, you know how to.
Exactly. You
know, right. And that kind of life experience or honing your skills or whatever it is, that's what people bring to All Stars. And it's why it's honestly my favorite to see, because I already love you. I already know you. We already, but to see how far you've come.
Yeah. And you feel like you got a real pony in the race because maybe you've gone to see that girl live and you're like, I not only know who she is on Drag Race, but I know who she is like as an artist.
Yes. And that's so true. And it's different.
And the stakes are higher when you feel like you know the person more, and you know, it's harder to know the person when they're on their first season. So All Stars for me, that's where the meat of Drag Race exists these days. But it's also, it's allowing the new season, like the, you know, the continuing seasons to kind of take on their own voice, you know? And maybe the newer seasons are about, like, you know, the queens who are fresh to the scene, and the All-Star seasons are about, like, and now that they've been in the scene, watch what they've learned and how they've developed. It totally sounds like I'm talking about, like, a cotillion and a bunch of, like, debutantes. Come see how these ladies have developed over the summer.
Hilarious. But no, it's true. It's absolutely true. And I love both, because you're right. The regular drag race, there are so many storylines going. You know, mm-hmm. the fresh kids to some seasoned queens who are now getting this kind of platform. Yeah. All-Stars is a completely different beast. But I love, they're such beautiful companion pieces.
They are. Ross, let's talk about the fact that you got married about a year ago.
About a year ago.
I follow you on Instagram, so I saw all the pictures. I saw everything leading up to it. I saw every picture of your radiant, smiling face. So how is married life treating you?
You know, it's so phenomenal. It's so unexpected what it feels like. I didn't know what it was. You know, I didn't grow up thinking I'd be married. You know, it wasn't a reality then. What came with it was this sense, this freedom to fail in a weird way. You know, it was always just me. I always had to kind of really have my back and take care of people. And so I always felt this pressure, like, well, if I fail, then everybody loses, you know? And what being with my husband and being married feels like now, and I didn't expect it, is like, I have this freedom to try anything, because if I fail, he's got me. Mm-hmm. You know? And that has just sort of allowed me to just try anything. Like I watch you on, you know, just soaring on Broadway. And I think, like, that's a perfect example of, like, you know, you have so many tools in your tool belt, and, like, take that one out now and do this and try it. And of course you're a great success. And then I think, what other tool do I have in my tool belt that I want to try? So that's why I'm, like, designing my clothes for Drag Race now, because, you know, what are you going to wear if you sit next to RuPaul? You don't swing. Yeah. Through, right. But so I'm like, well, let me try that. I've always wanted to do something like that. That's why I'm doing this tour now, because, okay, no one shows up. Well, okay, I'll go home to my husband and he'll think I'm funny. And
yeah, that's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's unconditional love. I had never, you know, like, when did I first learn the concept of unconditional love? I feel like it was late in life where I heard those words together, unconditional love. And it was described to me as, like, you know, the way you love your family, or the way you love your mom, where anything could happen and you'd still love them. Yes. And then I found unconditional love amongst friends in my chosen family. That's why we love our pets, you know, like, I mean, my love is unconditional for my cat. She couldn't give a shit about me, and I love it that way. But with, like, you know, having met my husband, and we've been through a lot of ups and downs, our relationship has been long distance the entire time, you know, that puts a lot of strain on it. But we've also had a lot of really, really wonderful moments. And since we've been through the hard shit and we're still here together, we know, like, we can get through some hard shit and we're still going to be there. So, and, you know, like, we haven't been through every experience, but we've been tested a bit, and we're still really happy to be married. And that's what builds that feeling of unconditional love, and that fearlessness of, like, okay, like, I can make a mistake and this person is gonna be okay, that I'm not perfect, you know?
yes. And they're gonna hold you to a standard. Like, I'm a much better man because I want to live up to who he is. I feel very, like, I want to be the person that he deserves, if that makes sense, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I love it. I love being married. I didn't know.
I love it too.
Yeah, right? I don't know. Good.
Can I ask you, because I also grew up not thinking that I would ever be legally married. I wasn't too perturbed by it I didn't care that I might never get married, other than I didn't like that someone was telling me I couldn't, you know? But now that I am, I say my husband this, my husband that, like people who know Michael's name, people who are good friends with Michael, I'm like, yeah, my husband was saying that. And they're like, you mean Michael? Michael, our housemate, you idiot.
No, I say it a lot too, because, yeah, you know, it's a word I never thought I'd be able to say. So, you know what I love saying? I love saying it on daytime TV. I love that I do it. And it's, you know, it's purposeful because we didn't have that.
Absolutely.
We didn't have people saying that on TV like that. And so, and Drew, you know, I get to do that show every day with
speaking
her.
Of saying it on daytime television, you're working with Drew Barrymore. Now, whereas Chelsea Handler was the Bert to your Ernie, it kind of feels like on Drew, it's just two Ernies.
Yeah, it does. Well, here's the deal.
We can stand to have a double dose of positivity in our life right now, you know, honestly.
I think that's why it's working, because, you know, Drew and I, it's so organic how it happened. It's another thing like, everything in my career is organic. It's like Leno happened, like that Drag Race happened.
Patience and tenacity. People always ask, like, what gets you ahead in this career? And I'm like, to get ahead, you have to be okay with not getting ahead for a long time. Like, you got to have patience for the right things to come along. Because if you just go scrambling to do every little thing, quality control, you're not making sure the stuff that's getting out there is the stuff you actually want to be seen for. Anyway, patience and tenacity, go on.
Well, patience and tenacity, and say yes. You know that great Liza song, say yes, you know, show up, do it for free first, show them what you can do. And that's what happened. I popped in for a day on Drew, and she had just launched the show in a pandemic. This is October 2020. She had just launched in September. No one in the audience. You know, it was really tough for her. And I popped in for one day, and it was like, I had just lost my mom in May of the pandemic. And I was just so broken and so lost. And Drew was so scared and doing this alone. And we walked into that room, and it really felt like here I'm plugging again, but it felt like I got you, girl, you know, she had me. And, you know, I've been on shows where it felt like if I messed up, they would all point at me and be like, look, he messed up, you know? And so to be on a show with someone who, if I drop a thing, will just pick it up and hand it back to me, and I'll do the same for her. And, you know, the intention is so good on that show. She's so great. And she lets me do things like, you know, we announced our engagement. I asked my brother to be my best man on that show. And, you know, and that is powerful that we're doing that on daytime television. You know?
It really is. And Drew Barrymore just seems like one of those great people. If you're lucky to meet her, you know, like just one of those like really fun people to have met, you know?
Well, she's magical. There's something very spiritual about her. Very truly, like, my husband's Dominican, and they say a bruja is like a witch. Mm-hmm. If someone's super special, she's a bruja, you know. Yeah. Drew is a bruja. She means everything. She means well. You know, she on air on the first season, she said we had a story about flower girls, and she's like, "Do you have a flower girl?" And I'm like, "Why? You want the gig?" And she was like, "Rossi, could I really? Would you?" And I was like, "Wait, are you being serious? Are you?" Yeah. And she did. She flew to Mexico for one day and was our flower girl in our wedding. You know, we just bought an apartment in New York City, and she surprised me and redid the entire thing. You know, we walked in one day and it was done. And that's like, she just is like a big sister like that.
Yeah. She seems really awesome. My favorite thing is that she has a sense of humor about herself, because I saw that Instagram video of her finding the window And then I saw, I can't remember who did the spoof of it. And I saw the spoof, though. It was an SNL actor, I
Chloe
think.
Chloe Fineman.
Yeah. And she's doing the spoof, and I was, like, losing my mind. But then what I loved was seeing Drew watching the spoof, losing her mind over it. And I was like, I just am so happy that, I mean, I feel like Drew, one of those people who have, again, been there forever, you know, like, she must have such a thick skin and to be such a positive person after having been a child actor, a sex icon, you know, like all the things thrown at women in the industry, she's had it thrown at her. And then here she is still here in the industry and she's like this bubbling fountain of life and joy. Like that to me says a lot about her because she's withstood a lot, you know, to be a woman in the industry in the 90s and the early 2000s, and especially to be like a young ingenue during those times, you know, like she's just, I can't imagine what's happened to her in her career. And for her to still be so positive, just like that kind of gives me hope for like humanity as a whole. Drew Barrymore exists, so I have hope.
I love that. You're very right. She has managed to have like thick skin, but also be very vulnerable.
Yeah.
And sort of allow us to grow up with her. And this new stage with that she's in with this show, you know, she said something to me. She said, I've never been myself on camera. You know, like think about that. Mm-hmm. She's been on camera since she was 8 months old, but she's never been herself on camera. And so this was like a scary thing to do for her. And the fact that it's working, you know, and I'm seeing her up close, she works so hard and the audience has really found us. It's amazing. And I just have to tell you, she's even better in person. You've got to come on the show, Jinx.
I'd say no. Absolutely.
You've got to come on. I want you two to get in the same room. That would be beautiful.
Oh, I'd love to. I'm so happy. I'm so happy you're having such a good time. Ross, thank you so much for being here. Your tour, I Got You, Girl.
Yes.
When is it going through? Where is it going through? And how can people get tickets?
So I'm going everywhere. And I'm on tour all summer and then just going to keep going, you know, during the season, I'll do, you know, some weekends here and there. But if you go to helloross.com, there are dates there. But this summer, really, I'm hitting every corner of the United States. I'm going to Canada. So just check dates, helloross.com. Come have fun with me. Remember fun? We shut the door on the outside world and we
remember
just
fun.
Remember? Jean? It's been feeding my soul. I just did a show last night. I got three more shows this weekend. It makes me, I don't know. It's the whole point. It's about creating and connecting. And that's exactly what I want to do with people.
Oh, I love it. Congrats on your tour. Congrats on your continued airtime. Ross, I have some compulsory questions that I ask every guest. You can answer them however you want. Are you ready for them?
Hit me.
First question, who is your celebrity crush today?
Aladdin.
Second question, are you spiritual?
Yes.
Okay. Final question, what's your go-to karaoke song?
Oh God, I have so many. You know what is good and gets people going and is an underrated song?
What?
Kokomo.
I feel like I sing that song an inordinate amount of times in my life. I find myself singing that song a lot. But
well, you get there faster if you take it slow.
Yeah, but I only know the Muppets version.
I used to call KBRC 1430 AM in Mount Vernon, Washington, and request Kokomo like 2-3 times a day.
I lived in Seattle for 12 years. I never visited Mount Vernon, but I heard it said a lot. So it's always so crazy when, do you know that like Cheyenne Jackson started his acting career in Seattle, in the Seattle area, and Megan Hilty.
I did not know that. Do you know who else is from Mount Vernon?
Who?
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck. And James Caviezel, who played Jesus in Passion of the Christ. And Ross Matthews.
And Ross Matthews to complete the trifecta. Thank you so much for being my guest today. Have a wonderful rest of your day. Have a wonderful rest of your tour. And we'll be seeing you on our TV screens, I guess, potentially 2 times a day forever.
I don't want to have the last word necessarily, but I just want to tell you how much I adore you. And in a weird way, I have no right to say this, but I'm going to say it. I'm just so proud of you.
Oh, thank you. I'll take it. You have every right to say it.
I'm very proud of you, happy for you, and I will be front row whatever you do next.
Oh, you got it. You always have a seat at my show, Ross. I'll have you and Michelle and Carson sit in a row, so it's familiar to me.
And then we'll judge you afterwards.
Yeah. Then I'll expect notes. Yeah. Of course. Have a good day, Ross. And thank you all so much for listening to Hijinks here on the Forever Dog and Moguls of Media Network. My name is Jinx Monsoon, and we have new episodes every Wednesday, so make sure to search for Hi Jinx on your favorite podcast app and hit subscribe. You can follow me at The Jinx on Instagram, at Official Jinx Monsoon on TikTok, or Jinx Monsoon Official. I should really figure that out. Or at Jinx Monsoon everywhere else. And I'll see you next Wednesday for some more Hi Jinx.
Mom!
To listen to Hi Jinx one day early and ad-free, sign up for Mom Plus at mompodcasts.plus. Hi Jinx is produced by Moguls of Media, aka Mom, hosted by me, Jinx Monsoon, and produced by Joseph Shepherd. Editing and sound design by Will Pitts. Executive produced by Willem Belli, Alaska Thunderfuck, Big Dipper, and Joe Cilio.